Spin Rate presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. So excited to be here talking with you about your Toronto Blue Jays on a little bit of a run, off to a bit of a good go here as the Blue Jays have returned to Toronto, facing some of the dregs of the American League Central, which you just love to see. You heard Caitlin and I, Caitlin McGrath, co-host of Spin Rate, who, of course, you can read at The Athletic. We talked about the weekend that was. I'm excited this midweek episode, where it's usually myself and a guest. I'm really excited to talk to Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. Shai has been covering the team for a long time at Sportsnet and with the Canadian Press before that. Great to talk to him. Great to pick his brain about what he sees, about the thought process maybe that may have went into some of the moves that the Blue Jays make. Shai and I had a great chat. Easy to do. Shai's a really nice and agreeable guy. How can you not have a great chat? Here's my spoiler alert. I'm telling you this is a good episode because Sean Green's name gets mentioned. That is the gold standard by which all good episodes are mentioned. Did Sean Green get a shout out? If he did, you're listening to a good episode of the show. This episode of the show, like all the other episodes of the show, are available to you no matter if you are an Athletic subscriber or otherwise. You can go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want. Subscribe to this show, give us a rating, give us a like, do all that amazing stuff that helps us feed the algorithm, helps us get the show in front of Blue Jays fan eyeballs, and we always want to welcome more folks in. And if this is your first time listening, thank you so much for taking the time. If you haven't subscribed yet to The Athletic, you can do that as well at theathletic.com/spinrate, where you can read everything that Caitlin writes about the Blue Jays. You can read the big national guys. You can read Eno, and you can read Ken Rosenthal and Keith Law and everybody as they describe the goings-on in the baseball world. And you can read about hockey, basketball. You want to read what Blake has to say about Kyle Lowry? Really, really nice and affecting, beautiful piece, as you come to expect from Blake Murphy, the king of the Raptors beat. All that stuff available to you if you are an Athletic subscriber. So again, theathletic.com/spinrate. Hook that up. Subscribe to the show. Do that. I hope you're enjoying the sights and sounds of the Blue Jays playing at home in Toronto with the roof open, as it should be, as a default, almost all the time, playing against Cleveland. Hopefully, presumably, fingers crossed, still doing good things against Cleveland and their wretched existing uniforms. They're on their way out. The point is, I'm going to talk to Shai Davidi. You're going to listen. It's going to be a great time. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Spin Rate. Shai, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Pleasure as always, Drew.
It is an exciting time to be covering the Toronto Blue Jays. Last week, I imagine, was very busy. And now it's not getting any less busy because they're winning ball games. And this is a team that not only signaled to us that they were going to try to win, but is in fact in the middle of doing that now. Is this a good way to be here in what should be the dog days of August? But it's like you're writing a different story every day because there's lots of storylines around this Toronto Blue Jays team.
Yeah, it definitely does not feel like dog days of August at all, right? Because obviously you get the emotional return home, which was amazing for our city and for the province and sort of where we are in the pandemic, first and foremost, but then just sort of a nice sort of symbol of normalcy. So that was a huge energy boost, which I also do think the players are feeling as well. And, you know, it's sort of easy to be cynical about that stuff sometimes and just think, oh, a lot of guys are just saying the right thing. But, you know, the more that I've been talking to people is that it's pretty genuine. I think that guys are really excited to be back and it does actually mean a lot to them. And then the baseball has been super interesting too, right? Because, I don't know, I've been trying to not do the parallels to 2015 or not to overdo the parallels to 2015, but they're just there, right? They're staring you in the face. And even somebody, somebody with the Blue Jays came up to me the other day and just randomly said, kind of reminds you of 2015 a little bit, doesn't it? And, you know, we kind of laughed about it, but, you know, they've got an opportunity to really take off and they're taking care of business against KC and Cleveland, the teams they need to be beating. And, you know, it's going to be a super intriguing weekend with that series against the Red Sox.
The Red Sox are in a bit of a rough shape right now, not looking great this last week against Detroit. But I think it's really interesting because the similarities between 2015 and 2021 are obvious, but at the same time, the teams are, you know, kind of at their core quite different. That was almost like a little bit of a last kick at the can, a very veteran group. While these guys are young, it would have been easy, or maybe this is, I should put this as a question. Do you think it would have been easy for the Blue Jays to have not kind of thrown it into fourth gear with the move to acquire a player like Jose Berríos, because they it would have been easy for them to stand pat and be like, don't worry, we're going to be good next year. What do you think? Do you think that the run differential kind of contributed to that? Or do you think it's just like they can read the writing on the wall and feel like this is an opportunity for this team?
So I think there are a couple of pieces there that are super important. So one, yes, you're absolutely right that analytically you could have made the case like stand pat, keep the prospects, you know, let's just kick the can down the road a little bit. And you could have been very justifiable in taking that approach. And I think that this front office realized that if they did that, they would be, maybe betraying is too strong a word, but I think that it would have created some frustration among their players, right? Because they're like, you know, we're here, we think we're good, you don't think we're good enough, you're not going to augment us, you're not going to make a move to help us out. And, you know, so I think there's that piece. Like you've got to keep pushing forward. And once you sign Springer to that contract, you know, you're on the track where you start making those types of deals for Jose Berríos, where you're giving up a lot of future value to create some present value. But you know, the other piece, and I don't think this swayed them, but I think it was in the back of their mind at least, was that, you know, you're coming back to Toronto, there's energy. You've got to re-engage your fans. You're back in the city, and then to have come out of the deadline, you know, with just, you know, the earlier moves for Simber and Trevor Richards and Corey Dickerson, you know, I just don't think that would have resonated with the fan base, and people still would have been happy, and there still would have been excitement, but. You know, it's just like, it would have just been a very lackluster return, where now it was like, yeah, we're back, we're here, we're in it. And you know, we're not just thinking about this year, we're thinking about next year too. And then once you get Jose Berríos into the mix, like now you've got a year and a half to sway him about the merits of Toronto and, you know, do some of the advanced work that the Twins had the leg up on. And you know, the Blue Jays should be able to pay him in a way that the Twins couldn't. So I think all those pieces played into it. But I do think that if they had stood pat, it would have been sending a wrong message to the players in the clubhouse. And that's something my sense is that they were pretty cognizant of.
You don't have to look any further than what happened in Seattle, where maybe the Seattle front office had a more sober view of their team and their sort of run of good luck versus the sustainability of that, but also obviously a really unpopular move with the players, where the Blue Jays I think, and I'd love to get your sense of this, that the price as it sort of adjusted as the day and the deadline approached, maybe that was something that softened that blow a little bit. If Minnesota had settled on Austin Martin and the Blue Jays had been like, you know, we are very cognizant of the things that he can do well, but also if they're happy with him, maybe we could be happy to not be happy, but that's a name that we are more comfortable with. Where if the price stayed higher, they wouldn't have allowed them to be so aggressive and kind of have their cake and eat.
Yeah, I mean, the price was definitely higher earlier in the week, and at that point, it was a non-starter. And once it got down to, you know, into something that resembled the Martin Woods Richardson package that it ended up being, at that point, it was a little bit more palatable and was something they could realistically consider. And, you know, it's funny because, I was at the Futures game in Denver, and I was having a conversation with a baseball person, and they said to me, "What do you think of Austin Martin?" And I said, "Well, you know, I just saw him play for three innings. That's the first time I've really seen him. But these are my impressions." Mm-hmm. And the person said, "You know, I'm not sure he's that good." And you know, I think that was a harsh view, but there is a polarity about him. You know, so I think there's some people who look at him and say they're not sure where he fits, and some people who are like, well, maybe he'll be a high OBP guy who controls the strike zone, who plays center field, but maybe he's not a superstar. So I don't know if that tipped the scales for the Blue Jays, but, you know, and I do know there are some people who are all in on him in the organization. And, you know, for them, it was a really, really tough deal to make. But I wonder if there was maybe some volatility in what he ends up being that helped sway them to make this deal. And look, I mean, if you're going to get Jose Berríos, like, you know, like you're going to have to pay a price, right? Like, I mean, a year and a half of Craig Kimbrell cost the White Sox Nick Madrigal, who's a major league player for five more years. Like, you just don't see that kind of price out there. So, you know, I think when, you know, with that as a bit of a frame of reference, you know, I don't think the Blue Jays overpaid for Berríos. I know there are people in the industry who think they do. And I think there are others who think they made an amazing deal. So to me, it's really, really fascinating. But, like, you know, if that price hadn't changed over the course of the week, then this deal doesn't happen, right? And that was the furthest the Blue Jays were willing to go. And, you know, when the moment of truth came, they did.
I think we need to page Dr. Freud when you're talking about Austin Martin and you go to Nick Madrigal, where it's like, maybe they're kind of the same guy. I mean, that's not something you want to think about in like a top five draft pick, but not again, it's so easy. And I know that I've been guilty of it. So many of us have been like, wow, that guy was covered in warts anyway, but his bat to ball skills are enviable. And that he has a chance to be a very strong major league regular, even with changing very little, assuming he finds a position.
Right. I mean, like, this is not to say that he's not going to be a good player. And let's not forget about, you know, Woods Richardson, who's, you know, got, you know, elite command at 19 or 20, whatever he is right now, and already at double A. You know, the Blue Jays could feel some pain in terms of what they gave up here. But, you know, you've got, at a certain point, you've got to stop worrying about the future and start worrying about the present. It was a really interesting trade deadline, because you saw a lot of teams who were on the fence going for it. And, you know, and just having some conversations with people, you know, one school of thought is that you came out of the pandemic and you're sort of on the cusp. You can't retreat, right? Like, you're just trying to get fans back into the stadium. You've got to keep people excited. You've got to keep people engaged. So, you know, that may have been one dynamic at play. And then, you know, maybe there's some other executives out there that was like, you know, we can't keep, you know, managing this like it's a stock portfolio forever. Like, yeah, you got to be cognizant of the present and the future. But, you know, when you have an opportunity to win, you know, that's valuable too. And you shouldn't piss that away. And, you know, I think we saw a little bit of that also. And I wonder if this maybe marks a point where there's a bit of a shift where, you know, this obsession with prospects and this obsession with, you know, what they're worth, like, you know, like you've been following it for years, and like, you've had your heart broken by a number of prospects over the years, right? Like,
we'll never be the same. Travis Snyder changed me forever.
Travis Snyder is the name that was right on the tip of my tongue too, because I was talking to someone about him today, and, you know, just about how sure we were about him, right? Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, when he came up, and then he had that series in Minnesota where, you know, he was just pounding home runs. You're just like, man, there it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, kids will break your heart, right? By and large, like, the vast majority of them will not become what you think they're going to. So at a certain point, just live for the day, you know, when you have an opportunity to win.
And I think that I agree. And also that we'll see teams value, like, maybe the blue chip guys a little bit differently from the solid regular guys, which, again, we've fallen over ourselves to be like, Austin Martin's good. He's going to be a good player. Like, but at the same time, it's like, if he's not a superstar, like, we're not talking about Bo Bichette, you know, 4 years ago. We're not talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. We're not talking about Wander Franco. Like, those guys are still not going to move. When you get a guy that is getting into that 65, 70, 75 future value sort of players, like, those guys are going to stay put. But when you do what the Blue Jays have done and build up a bit of a stable of players who are 50, 55 sort of average big league regular, maybe a little bit above average big league regular. You start to think about Jordan Groshans and other players. Like, when you have two or three of them, you can afford to make a move for one of them. But the other thing I want to ask you, though, as well, is the Barrios trade, I think, is perfect because it's not just win now. They didn't do this for Max Scherzer, Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy. This was not just a win now. This is get better immediately, but stay better as well into the future, which I'll ask you, like, that is a big differentiator. They wouldn't have paid this price for a rental. I'm not out of bounds by saying that.
No, you're 100% correct in saying that. And, you know, the other piece, which I touched on a little bit earlier, is I do think the Blue Jays are looking at this and saying, it's really hard in general to get elite starting pitchers to come to the American League East, right? Because who, unless you're Gerrit Cole and you're a little bit psycho, like, who wants to come to this division to, you know, get your brains beat in a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And to have to grind through that. You know, you get it. The one thing that, you know, the Blue Jays have had issues getting guys to come here, but once guys are here, they're generally able to keep whoever they want to keep, right? Mm-hmm. Like anybody they've wanted to extend, they've been able to extend, like, for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get Barrios here, like, free agency, can you bring him here? Maybe, but now you've got some time. You know, he gets to know Pete Walker. He gets to know the situation, gets to know the city. Maybe his family likes it here, feels super comfortable. You know, this is a very friendly community to anybody, to Latin Americans, to anybody who's, you know, not American per se. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's an inherent advantage there. And maybe push comes to shove in free agency, that gives you a bit of an edge. And so, you know, that's obviously not the driving factor, but that's part of what you're paying for too. You're paying for the head start with Barrios there. And look, you know, they're going to need pitchers like this. I do think the Blue Jays have in this current cycle another mega contract in them. Maybe it's to him.
I love that idea. And I think that Robbie Ray is a great kind of, like, proof point for that, where it's like, come in, see how we do things. Like, we can help you, you know, be a competitor. Because I think it's easy when you say, like, no one wants to come here to get their brains beat in, my first thought is like, well, they get paid all the same. But at the same time, these guys are competitors. They want to go out, they want to win, they want to do their best. So if there's that opportunity to say, we can help you to get even better, we can help you to, we'll give you a whole big bag full of money and you'll be pitching in big games and winning, because that's what we're about here. I definitely think that's an attractive value add. And if it's not a match, if the guy, you know, if they're not on the same wavelength, then so be it. Then it cost you prospects, but they played for you now, and now they're off they go, and you can continue to make those kind of decisions. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out. This is sort of off script a little bit, mega contracts and extensions. Do you have a sense of, like, are those conversations happening around like the homegrown guys? I mean, I'm sure that maybe numbers get floated out here and there, but I mean, you know, everyone who watches the Blue Jays game would love to know that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is in for the long haul. But I think maybe it's probably a little bit too early to start thinking about that stuff.
It's interesting because it's funny. Somebody sent me something right after Vlad won MVP. Mm-hmm. At the All-Star game, it was like, you know, do you think, or it was something like, I think 10 at 350 is not an unreasonable number for an extension for Vlad at this point. And, you know, I was going back and forth, and, you know, I'm just still thinking about having trouble thinking or wrapping my mind around sort of this new era of Blue Jays. But I still can't see them going to that a number like that. But with Vlad and with Bo, I think the challenge is, like, there's not much incentive for them to sign one of those deals, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, they both did well in bonuses at the beginning of their career. You know, they both come from family, from fathers who did very well in their own baseball careers. Like, there's no desperation of money. And, like, you know, those are both guys who are super confident who probably want to max out on their value. So I'm sure that there has been at least some sort of casual conversation about it. Whether it got beyond that, I'm not sure. But I think that sweet spot between, you know, how much, you know, where the team and the player share risk in terms of, you know, what the player gives up in upside versus what the team gives up in guaranteed dollars. I don't know if there's a middle point where they can both get there. Right. Because, you know, mm-hmm. Vlad thinks he's going to be better than he's definitely not doing an Acuna contract. Right.
Which is good for him. Jeez, that would he'd be like given just handing over bags of money to the Blue Jays.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I think that he'd be looking to surpass Tatis. And, you know, knowing Bo Bichette probably thinks he's in that Tatis neighborhood, too. I just think those are going to be really difficult contracts for the Blue Jays. And there's also still a part of me that wonders if the Blue Jays want to see Vlad do it again, right? Like mm-hmm. they're, you know, Vlad's been through a lot, you know, they've been through a lot with him. I wouldn't be surprised if they, like, everybody's expected him to be this and expect him to be this for a long time. But if I'm being frank, you know, I wonder if there's just a part of them that wonders is like, do they have, you know, Prince Fielder on their hands in, you know, 7 or 8 years? And you know, I think that they would model it out that way and they might mm-hmm. land at that conclusion.
I don't think it's unfair if you're the team to think about it that way, and because you've seen that the production is contingent on his ability to be fit. Mm-hmm. The physical fitness unlocked his ability to be who he is. So, you know, if he's going to get a big raise this winter, and I think the thing that I want to move on to talking about too is that he is like undoubtedly now the face of the franchise. And I think having them come back and play in front of the fans in Toronto has, you know, I put that in my newsletter today, just like, it's so his team. It is his crowd. Everyone's eating out of his hands. You know, just like the ball makes a different sound coming off the bat, the crowd makes a different noise when he's coming up. The opposing crowds make a different noise when the ball comes off his bat. He is like getting to be a super, like he is a superstar in the game of baseball that I can't remember the last time, you know, the Blue Jays had one of these. Josh Donaldson is too much of a prick to be that, like in the best way possible. Like, he doesn't care about that stuff. He's too busy being an asshole. And Jose Bautista was like a little bit older. So like, but everything I think for Vlad is just like, it's all right there. It's all kind of in the palm of his hands. And I'd love to get your sense of watching this game and seeing this team and these exciting players in front of this crowd. Did it, you know, was just the feeling of that energy running through the ballpark? It's a lot different than watching it on TV or watching it on a monitor when you're in the studio.
Oh, dear Lord. It's so different. And, you know, it's not that I was surprised by how much you miss, but, you know, it overwhelmed me at first, just like how much you don't see through mm-hmm. the monitor and how much of that feel that you miss. And look, you know, Vlad is all the things you just said, and he's now on a national plane too. You know, that really hit home for me during All-Star Week in Denver, where, you know, his face is just plastered everywhere, right? You go to the All-Star Fan Fest and he's right there with, you know, Tatis and DeGrom and, you know, all the brightest lights of the game. You know, it's his face that's on lamppost, right? His jersey's for sale. Like, that's the plane that he's on at this point. So the connection, you know, basically, you know, this happened for half a season away from Toronto. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, now he's home and he's ours. And there's going to be that connection because he's homegrown and everybody's been waiting for this almost from the moment he signed in 2015. And as he stomped his way through the farm system, and you were like, okay, this is the second coming of Carlos Delgado or something along those lines. And yeah, he's that good, right? Like, he's legitimately that good. And, you know, the one thing, you know, when we talked about, you know, mentioned the Prince Fielder comp as just to throw that out there, you know, the one thing is that he's so driven to be elite that I don't know that, you know, that would assuage some of my concerns. Now, it's not my $300 million, so it's a lot easier for me to say that. But, you know,
you're more of a stocks and bonds guy. You're not investing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're playing the market.
Yeah, you know, like very conservative with my hundreds of millions of dollars. he's so driven. Like, he's intent, I think, on bettering his dad's career, right? Like, that's kind of like the way, that's sort of the strata of how he sets his goals and dreams, right? Like, you know, you have a guy who's like that and who's charismatic and who's, you know, really the center of attention, that is likable, that is so engaging in so many different ways. You know, I mean, it's tough to let that go, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you're going to spend on somebody, like, this is who you should spend it on, right? And it, you know, to me, there are sort of a few great champs in Blue Jays history. One of them is that Carlos Delgado didn't finish his career here, that mm-hmm. Roy Halladay didn't finish his career here. And, you know, you'd like to see that, you know, someone like Vladdy, who's, you know, come through the system, like someone like Bo, who's come up through the system, you know, you'd like to see them be able to go wire to wire, because, you know, they're, you know, at least you can project them as being productive, you know, late into their careers.
And even, I think that the thing with Vlad, you know, it's so interesting to hear you describe that experience of the All-Star game, because, you know, Carlos Delgado played in the 90s and into the, you know, the turn of the century, where there was no, instantly highlights are shared across social media, where, you know, you, me, and our kid sister are tweeting out you know, video, like live HD video, seconds after it happens, such that instantly when a great season like this is happening, everybody who's attached to baseball knows where Carlos Delgado might have been happening a little bit more quietly. Carlos Delgado in some ways could have been all of those things, a tremendous statesman for the game, you know, beautiful smile, great looking guy, you know, everything you would want in an athlete, but just maybe the time wasn't right, where here's Vlad and he's having so much fun. And, you know, the camera, the Sportsnet camera on the weekend, just, it couldn't turn away from him because he was always doing something. I think you're right that if you are running a professional sports team and you're not only in the business of winning baseball games, but also in being an entertainment brand, essentially, you could do a lot worse than kind of sticking your flagpole in with a guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
You know, the other thing that strikes me is, you know, it's interesting kind of hear the way you're describing Delgado, but Delgado was also caught in that generation that was still like buttoned down, and you can't let your emotions take over, and you can't have fun. You kind of have to, you know, be there and act like you've done it before, and that whole mentality. And, you know, and Delgado was a different guy because, you know, he had thoughts about more important things in society than mm-hmm. baseball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he wouldn't, you know, I think there was a part of him that didn't want to kind of get too far out in the public with some of those things, not because he wasn't passionate about it or didn't believe in it, but because the game just sort of frowned upon that. Mm-hmm. So he just did his thing and, you know, stayed true to his convictions, but didn't grandstand about it. Whereas I think today, you know, it's far more acceptable for players to you know, have an opinion and to stand out. And, you know, if you're willing to kind of be there to take the heat, but also to just have fun. And I don't know, I try not to get caught up in the we love each other narratives too much, because, you know, every team loves each other when things are going well. And, mm-hmm. You know, the real test of how much you love one another is when you're in utter misery together, right? Like when you're losing 95 games like they did in 2019. You know, let's mm-hmm. see how much you love each other at that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is something to the bond that they have. Like mm-hmm. these guys have been through a fair bit over the past year and a half. Like, and, you know, obviously this is relative to what everybody's been dealing with, to the pandemic. And, you know, let's kind of make sure that that's being framed in the proper context. But, mm-hmm. you know, from a baseball perspective, you know, to be stuck in a minor league ballpark in a city that isn't your own, without your amenities, and having to face challenges that you alone out of 30 clubs have to face. And then, you know, this year to have to move three separate times, you know, to have to operate under different protocols than everybody else, because, you know, thankfully we have a government that, you know, isn't completely punting on the pandemic.
You're not quite on your own. I'm not quite.
For them, that's a bond that they'll have for forever. I think that they'll have the COVID years bond in a way that other teams won't, or maybe at a deeper level than other teams. And there's genuine care for one another. You don't see a lot of I should be the guy, or that was my AB, or you don't see any of that sort of pouting in that dugout, right? You see a lot of celebration. You see a lot of guys who are happy for one another when they get a hit or hit a home run. There is something to that. I don't know that I can put my finger on it just yet, but there is more to that relationship than is typical. And I do believe that's meaningful.
I will not stand for this Sean Green and Carlos Delgado erasure. These children, these Gen Zs and millennials, they don't know what they missed with Sean Green and Carlos Delgado. Talk great players, guys that got along famously. I read Sean Green's book, and let me tell you, I learned a lot. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, but that was a great era. Like that team, to me is the sort of the cautionary tale for this group of legends, right? Like, you just think about that group of talent. So you had Carlos Delgado, Sean Green, Alex Gonzalez, Shannon Stewart, Roy Halladay, sort of on the latter part of that, Chris Carpenter, Kelvin Escobar. Like, you have to win with that group. Like, and I know what the American League East was at the time and the challenges they faced, but that is a lost opportunity that team they weren't able to push that group over. Like, that's a group that should have been good for at least a division title or two, at least a wild card maybe. But the division was stacked against them, certainly. If they're in any other division, they're going to the playoffs multiple times, I would wager. But going into this past offseason, the Blue Jays had to make a move like a George Springer or something like that, Marcus Semien, because you got to give this talent, this collection of talent that you have, an opportunity. And you've got like another wave of prospects coming. This franchise is positioned really, really well. I think that era of Blue Jays that you're just talking about, that's the loss, right? That's where you really missed an opportunity.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors. This era of Blue Jays baseball has a couple pretty exciting months ahead. I'll let you go after this, but what is it you're looking forward to seeing, coming down the stretch here? I mean, I think that while the Blue Jays have a mountain to climb in terms of teams ahead of them in the wild card and then division, I don't think that there's any reason to think that, I don't believe there's anything that makes them worse than any of the teams ahead of them. They have the chance to be better. They have a pretty favorable schedule. What do you think? Like, are you looking forward to some pretty tense games and some a good battle for the division in the playoffs coming down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You think that the run differential is going to show up more in the one loss, and that the win expectancy will normalize to an extent. I'm really interested to see what Nate Pearson does for this team, right? He threw a simulated game today. He's going to be in a game in Florida in the next few days, and then to AAA Buffalo after that. Maybe he's a week and a half, 2 weeks away, maybe less, if everything goes well. If you add just that one elite arm to the bullpen, if he's that elite arm, then all of a sudden the bullpen looks a lot more stable. And you look at some combination of Meza with Simber and Romano and Pearson and Richards, you're like, all right, well, maybe these guys can lock down those close games, because that's what's killed this team, right? Like they have left so many games on the table, which all you have to do is win half of those, and they're the Boston Red Sox right now. So that's how thin the margin is. And I'm really curious to see if they can close it. And, and if they don't, there are going to be some serious laments over, not being able to, augment that bullpen in time, because that to me is where, you know, this season will be lost if it doesn't happen. It was just that stretch, and, you know, injuries happened and they had some bad luck, and, you know, I do like their approach. You know, they took some big swings. They try to get sort of, you know, low dollar, high risk, high return relief signings. And, you know, unfortunately they all went bust. But you know, they swung for impact. And you know, I think that's what they should be doing, but you know, maybe there was a more balanced approach to take, and that might be the lesson to take into next offseason. But you know, it's going to be really fun to watch, because you know, win or lose, this team's generally entertaining, and you know, they make it interesting right to the last out more often than not. So that's what I'm curious to see. You know, like, you know, I've done the 2015 narrative a lot, and maybe it ends up on a similar trajectory.
You know, I think you are right, and I agree that it's not even – the team is so good and the core is in place that Nate Pearson doesn't have to come in and be lights out. He doesn't have to come in and turn into, you know, whoever. I'm trying to think of like a guy who went – Kirby Yates in like 2019. Like, doesn't have to come in and strike everybody out. Just like Corey Dickerson doesn't have to come in and be – you know, Joey Gallo doesn't have to come in and be a huge difference maker. He gives them a little bit of a different look. He gives them a little bit of depth. It gives them a lot of options. And suddenly the team becomes just that much more dangerous, because they have more than one way to beat you. And they are not as vulnerable, I think, to the late inning collapses, and also maybe the late inning big arms. I think that those small moves on top of the pile of talent could really be a big difference maker when the games get tight.
Yeah, I agree. To me, it's like, you know, I use this analogy a lot in 2015, and I really should come up with a better one because I've used it a couple times this year, and I'm like, maybe just my creative juices aren't there. But, you know, it's almost like you've got like a mansion, and there's just like these leaks in the basement, these constant little leaks in the basement. And it's just, can you patch up those leaks in the basement? And then you've got like this amazing mansion. But, you know, until, you know, like on the 2015 team, it was the shortstop defense, outfield defense, and the bullpen, you know, and then, you know, Sanchez to the bullpen along with Lowe and Hawkins, you know, that shored up the bullpen. You know, Tulowitzki took care of shortstop, and Ben Revere tightened up defense in left. And all of a sudden, you know, that was an airtight team. And, you know, for this club, it's sort of similar, right? Like, you've had some defensive issues, you know, at third base, a little bit in the outfield on occasion. Now you've got Dickerson. Espinal's going to be playing a little bit more at third base, especially while Biggio's out. And then fix that bullpen. You know, that bullpen has been the main source of the leaks. And, you know, you're not relying on, you know, the Anthony Castros and Joel Piamps of the world to close out games. And, you know, they got thrust into those roles out of desperation. It was probably unfair to them and unfair to the team, but, you know, desperate times, desperate measures. And, you know, if now they have some better guys, and if Pearson can just be that little bit of a boost, if he can be the Sanchez of this year, then I don't know. I'd be worried if you're the other clubs, because, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, the big reason why the Rays and the Red Sox are where they are is because, you know, the Blue Jays have blown so many leads late against them.
To them specifically, exactly.
Specifically those teams.
Mm-hmm. Shai, thank you so much. Let the people know where they can find you, where they can find your work, and what they can look forward to seeing or hearing from you in the coming days and weeks.
All right. Sportsnet.ca is the Blue Jays Central pregame show, and, you know, on social on occasion when I, you know, when we get to it. So, you know, I appreciate everybody following, and I appreciate you having me on the podcast again.
It is absolutely my pleasure, sir. Thank you so much. Have yourself a great evening.